TV Corner.
Hey guys, welcome to another Film Corps TV Corner Game of Thrones podcast for season 6, episode 5, The Door. A great episode. What'd you guys think overall?
I was into it. You know, I really thought they really threw in some surprising changes or some surprising things that I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, I thought it was it's an important episode, but I don't think I liked it. I don't think I liked the execution of it overall.
Wow, okay. I mean, you're definitely the first person to tell me they didn't like the episode, but I really want to hear why. Let's get down into our breakdown, and we'll dive into why you didn't like it.
Maybe
we'll convert you over, you know, this discussion. Who knows? All right, so in our first scene, Sansa confronts Littlefinger. Essentially, she's just like, did you know about Ramsay? If you didn't, you're an idiot. If you did, you're my enemy. I think he definitely did know about Ramsay. Or at least, you know, assume some things. Why do you think she didn't kill him right there?
I don't think it was in her nature, you know. She's showing face, but like...
Yeah.
Could she order him struck down right there? I don't know. I don't think it was in her
nature. Yeah, I kind of feel like Littlefinger is still kind of the closest thing to family that she has.
Other than Jon.
You know, other than Jon. Yeah, yeah. But you know, Littlefinger has been there... like throughout everything, right? So he was there at King's Landing, you know what I mean? Like, he's this tie to everything that she's gone through, and I can see that being kind of difficult for her to break mm-hmm. from, you know?
Yeah, what I really liked about that scene is it really reminded me of when Littlefinger wanted to marry Catelyn, like way back when he challenged Brendan mm-hmm. Stark to a duel. And basically Catelyn told him the same thing afterwards, like, never talk to me again. So I really like that symmetry between, like, you know, mother and daughter both coming to the same
conclusion. Actually, I mean, I actually kind of believe him. I mean, not completely, but I think that he felt that maybe Roose Bolton was going to sort of keep his kid on a short leash.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And his self-interest was going to make sure that Sansa wasn't hurt, you know, because he knew that Roose Bolton understood the sort of political nature of it, you know. When she brings up the rape to me, like, maybe I just want to believe, you know, that there's something redeeming in Littlefinger, or, you know, maybe it's just the acting, but I did feel like there was something there. And my prediction is that he comes to help them anyway and sort of redeems himself.
My prediction is that I want to say that maybe Ramsay kills Littlefinger. That's, like, my secret hope. But maybe in some way he does redeem himself. I mean, like, we talked about this a lot. It's been kind of a constant theme in our podcast. Is, like, characters aren't just flat. They aren't just all evil or all good. So, I mean, I'm sure Littlefinger can be a little slippery. But I think deep down, you know, he's the most evil person.
I guess it comes down to, yeah, like how much you believe he loved Catelyn Stark. And you know... loved in a really positive way, right? Yeah, right. Yeah. Rather than like some weird possessive, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bobby Brown kind of love.
Willing to murder your husband.
And you know, actually, also what it comes down to is do we believe about his news about the Blackfish?
Yeah.
Because if that's not true, like if he's trying to set her up, then it could go against everything that we could be thinking about him at this point, you know, if he is decently, you know, if he is genuine in his desire to help out Sansa, or if he's trying to betray her, you know, because she's already seems to trust him, like she's already given that information is good to the people that she's allied with.
In a way, I feel that maybe Sansa didn't fully trust Littlefinger's information, or rather when Jon inquires, you know, how do you know this, when she brings it up at the table, she says that she saw a letter from Ramsay. So either she doesn't
she's
trust
trying to
Jon,
check it out, maybe.
Or she doesn't
beforehand.
Actually trust Littlefinger's information fully.
It's, I mean, if the Blackfish does, like, has rounded up the troops, then there's, like, a whole power shift over in the was it the Riverlands?
Yeah.
That has not been touched on at all, but it means, like, the Freys are probably kind of weakened, or there's something going on there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which I thought was kind of like, that's true, which I feel like we would have heard a mentioning of at some point in these past four other episodes.
Yeah.
Those are major areas. I mean, at least at King's Landing.
Yeah, at the same time, though, like every, you know, any place that we would have heard it in past seasons is in complete chaos, right? So King's Landing has way too much to deal with. They really don't care about what's happening up north. Varys is in the east, right? So he's not, like, our classic exposition guys in the show are all over the place,
that's
right?
That's true. That's a great point.
You know, so you could kind of just chalk it up to,
yeah, we've got no whispers,
that, right? Yeah, I mean, it kind of seems like they're pushing everything to a big northern battle. So I kind of believe it. I mean, I feel like if he's lying, that's just another wrench in the plot that I'm not sure like what the purpose of that payoff is. Like what, Bran's gonna get there and there isn't an army. So that's kind of why I think this is Littlefinger's chance at redemption.
All right. But as a side note, River Run is pretty close to King's Landing. And it's definitely between there and Castle Rock. So we should have gotten mention of it by now. And I'm not saying Littlefinger isn't telling the truth, but I think it's kind of poor writing to not...
Well, and that's... Yeah, that's... I mean, and like, I think we're seeing a lot of that this season, where there's so much happening. They're trying to tie up so many loose ends. It's hard to tell whether something is an effect of poor plotting, right, mm-hmm. by the showrunners, versus interesting like character development. You know, like, oh, is Littlefinger like pulling a fast one on us? Like, no, it could just be that they got only so much, you know, runway now,
and so many subplots, right? To squeeze.
Which, frankly, like, if you guys are cool to move on to the Kingsmoot, like, I thought there was no better example of that than
Kingsmoot, which I am so frustrated.
I thought was probably, this was like maybe the worst subplot beyond like the Dorne one from last season. Like,
oh my I totally forgot Dorne was even a place right now. Like, I totally forgot.
What a blown opportunity, I feel like, for a super cool, like, Spartan warrior race of the sea, you know? Yeah. Like they drown their own guys, and then you have to come back to life to be one of them. I mean, that's fucking dope.
Yeah, that's fucking dope, but...
They, you know, but, like, who cares? Like, the first thing he says is... where
my nephew and niece, I want to kill.
But he goes like, let's go murder them, and like his like stupid Swedish accent that doesn't make sense, you know, with everyone else in his family who's British, you know. So everything about that just rang false to me, you know. And I the idea that he's gonna get on some ships and go to Daenerys, like we are to think that Daenerys would ever take this guy, this psychopath,
just for his ships,
on her just army.
More likely,
I mean, like,
kill
what
him.
Is the point of all this?
Well, I have a number of issues with this entire scene, because as we know, like, regardless if they wanted to support Euron, like, he admits to fully killing Baelon. Then he says, okay, I want to kill Yara. Like, these people still were totally down with her. So no one is going to be like, oh, yeah, let's go murder them. Like, none of these men, they're all, like, super loyal. Like, yeah, maybe in the long run.
Yeah, what a bunch of turkeys, right?
Just no, like, yeah, the crowd was just so easily swayed. Every time, whoever raised their voice highest just was like, yeah, okay. You know, like, it's kind of disappointing.
Like,
I thought the Kings movie
like
was something more.
Fans are like a WWE, you know, event. Like, they're, I mean,
WrestleMania like, style. Just...
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, let's go for him. He spoke last, you know? Like,
he spoke last.
When, like, that shot of them, like, running up single filed through the canyon, I was just like, what? I mean, what a joke, you know?
But I will say, good on, I mean, although it didn't help much, good on our boy Reek. He actually supported her, you know, when it came down to it, you know. I mean, it wasn't like much of a choice for him at that point, but, you know, it's one thing when people are like about to offer their support to you to be king, and he, you know, does what he said he was going to do.
Well, then, I mean, also, like, it makes this unnecessary like family feud that really wasn't prevalent, like, going on in the books. Like, basically, he marries her off to another lord in the books, and does this by using a seal to stand in for her, which was pretty cool and, like, would have also added some depth to, like, kind of the culture of the Ironborn. But we're just getting this really, like, I mean, what is going to come of this? Like, he's obviously not going to go make it to Daenerys. So it's like...
Well, it sounds like he's going to chase them down.
Yeah, he wants to chase them down. He's like, build me 1,000 ships. This is going to take all season. Is the rest of the Iron Islands storyline this season just people building ships as fast as they can? Because that would be stupid boring.
You know, and I mean, like, to my, you know, I told you guys that I didn't like this. Like, I know it's an important episode, but I didn't like the execution. And a lot of it is the pacing of it, which, like, in this scene... Or like this part of the story was really obvious. He wins. They run away. Like in the time that he's put underwater, it's super unclear how much time has passed. Like what the hell is going on? You know.
And, or like, why did no one notice they were gone before that point when he asked about it?
Right. Like where are all these dudes running? They stole like 100 ships. There had to be a whole gang of dudes running away.
Yeah, like half their population, right?
Well, you know, this, I mean, that whole thing with Ironborn has been a little half-baked. I mean, over the entire series, in my opinion. So we'll see where this goes.
Honestly, I hope they all just sink.
Drown their dead gods.
We can move on. Sorry, go ahead.
I was trying to think of their quote the next, that I couldn't think of right away.
What does dead mean?
What does dead mean? Never die? Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so Arya gets her first task as a faceless man. She has to kill Lady Crane, who is an actress, who ironically plays Cersei, who was on her list. So in a way, she gets to kill Cersei.
Yeah, she gets Cersei after all. This task seemed very purposefully given to her. Like, I don't even know if anybody paid for this woman to be killed. It seems like, can Arya, you know, like, I mean, she has to go through, you know, being Arya, as she witnesses how everybody feels about her dad and her family.
Well, it's a little bit like, I don't know if you guys ever seen, I think it's called The Wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A movie with Angelina Jolie, where like there's the idea is that assassins keep this sort of, this like balance in the world, right? And it doesn't really matter whether you've done something necessarily to deserve it, that your death is sort of predestined.
Like and, necessary. You know,
Obviously this episode deals with a lot of like predestination and sort of things being chosen before, right? Like sort of written in time. As a servant, she doesn't get to ask questions, right? So it's this idea that I think that they keep a sort of balance, you know, in this world. And then, but you know, then like I love that idea, but then it does sort of fly in the face of like that there are hired goons too that can be, you know, brought in.
You said the price was paid.
To whack someone, you know, so.
My prediction is we'll get some sort of shocker that maybe Lady Crane isn't who she pretends to be, even as a real person. You know, maybe she's acting to be Lady Crane.
Perhaps.
It could also just be like maybe the Waif is pretending to be Lady Crane just as a challenge to Arya.
Do you think that he, do you think that he knows he's testing her sense of herself as
totally.
A girl.
I mean, especially when she was watching the play. I mean, Arya is saying, you know, I am no one. But yet, when she watches the play and sees her father come out, or the man playing Ned Stark, that's when you see all that emotion come back. So she definitely still hasn't let go. So he's just, you know, are you really testing if... He's testing if she's really committed to this or not. And I think we can obviously tell that she's not. Because she's already questioning, like, why should I kill her? Like, if you're down for it, you're not going to ask. Right. You just would do it.
How did you guys feel about that gratuitous dick shot?
About damn time.
Yeah, it was a long time coming.
What's crazy is, like, I didn't even realize it was actually a penis because we've never seen one. We don't really see that. I don't think we've ever seen one in this show. Maybe
Hodor's
season
one.
Yeah,
we saw Hodor's for a moment, a split second.
Well, they're few and far between. So, like, I didn't even realize...
There's a couple, I feel like, at the brothels and stuff, right?
But I didn't, like, I mean, like, you know how many boobs we've seen? Like, how many pairs? Like, a lot. Like, I didn't even realize I was looking at a penis. I was like, oh, that's a weird object. What is in the middle of the screen? Oh, wait, that's what it is.
They even put a pair of boobs, like, immediately after the penis, just in case you had to, like, wipe that image from your mind, you know?
They did. Your reset. Yeah. The bros who can't handle it. Speaking of bros who can't handle it, Jorah got sent off. To find a cure for himself. I was like, okay. I didn't really see it going that direction, but...
Do you buy it? Do you guys buy that that's like actually the purpose, or is she telling him to go off and
Well, I think
like,
she's
die,
like honorably trying basically. To discharge him. Like saying like, "Hey, like dude, it's cool. I know you're about to die. Like I don't want you to feel like I hate you and you can't come back with me right away." So honestly, for her it was a good
I thought the scene was weird itself, just like this weird after action scene where she just you know, this is, I don't know, apparently the next day and the hordes belong to her, but it's just kind of the three of them in the secluded area talking about other things.
Oh my God. Dude, I'm like, number one, no one gives a fuck about this side plot with Jorah. Like, whatever. I want to know what you're going to do with the Dothraki. Like, I really don't care. Like,
I think, yeah.
Is it just, please, God. Why is Dario hanging out with her, too? Like, can he just give them some fucking moment. Privacy? Like,
yeah, I think it was just, like, kind of a send-off for Jorah. Because, I mean, this is like Game of Thrones cancer, right? Like, nobody's ever found it. Nobody's ever found a cure for this stuff. Like, so.
Well, the Princess Shireen, right, had it on her face, and Stannis.
That was magic, right, that saved her, though, right?
No one knows. No one knows yet.
But the idea was that she was young enough, you know, her body was resilient enough to sort of to fight it off. So you can figure that, like, an old old dog, like, Jorah doesn't have much of a chance.
Yeah, Jorah's done for.
Jorah. Do you think he's going to find the cure?
But no, he's not coming back.
No, I mean, you think he's done? I mean, it's a weird place. Like, I feel like he's still got some fight. Well, okay, I think the bigger problem is it doesn't feel earned. Because she basically got out of that situation by herself. And Dario and him were just sort of like, what do they do?
Well, they barred the door. They barred the doors.
Put a thing of wood through a door, basically.
But he saved her. He saved her the ring, though. Remember when they were in the fighting pits as well.
That's true.
Right.
Well, I don't want another Jorah Ex Machina like appearance. Like, I don't want him just like...
Unless he shows up as a stone man trying to kill Daenerys. I don't want to see him again.
Basically the thing.
Because there's like... The other way I looked at that scene is basically Dany's cold as fuck and she's just like, ugh, go fix your shit and come back if you can. But, you know.
Well, speaking of being teary-eyed, let's move on to Meereen. Where Tyrion invites the Red Priestess to come over, and it's like, hey, like, let your followers know that Dany's super chill. Cool. And she's like, yeah, totally. And Varys gives her a lot of shit. She gives some shit back to him, and the best... Fast-forwarding through all this, really, nothing really crazy happened with that, except for she knows who the voice was that Varys heard during his castration. And she also knows what he said. What do you guys think about that?
I mean,
that?
At this point, it could be Bran. Right, it could be anybody. I don't know.
What could Bran possibly be saying? Like,
yeah,
the voice was. I figured it was the Red God.
Rolar. Rolar. I didn't care. Insofar as like it's not a like I just found out about this. Like there's a mystery here, you know. So I don't care. But what I thought cool about the scene was that Varys, up until this point, has always been. The guy holding the cards towards religion that doesn't allow him like it, for an episode that has basically steered the whole show almost fully into like the magic zone, right? It's interesting to start taking the characters who have sort of classically always been like the men of reason and logic, and start showing the weakness in that. Guessing that it's going to be important, you know, whatever the voice was and whatever. And it's going to cause Varys, you know, give him some more tools to sort of be helpful.
Did you guys also notice that she also has a ruby necklace like Melisandre does?
Oh, yeah. She's old as fuck, totally. The guy who introduced her said she's like the first priestess or something. First priest. Maybe that's just a title, but it could actually
I think so. Yeah. I mean, yeah, maybe it does refer to it, but I think for us, it's supposed to just signify like, hey, she's top dog.
Daenerys is the princess who is promised. I mean, maybe it's more than just, you know, brand merging, you know, between the Unburnt and the Red God. Maybe it's maybe there's a joint venture going on here.
I mean, at this point, I think anybody with a big lighter is now being called, like, the prince who is promised. So, like, whatever.
Well, you know, if L and R, right, L plus R is correct, and I guess we'll find that out this season, then you have two possible Targaryens. On either side of the sea, with their own Red Priestess, who is supporting them, who's on their side. So it's really neat. Yeah, you know, it'll be really tidy if that's the case.
Well, yeah. Let's move on to north of the of the wall. Bran gets some pretty interesting backstory into the White Walkers, which I think has, it just, I mean, I didn't think, I, the thing is, I felt shocked by this, by the revelation that the Children of the Forest made the White Walkers, but then also not that shocked. Like, I made sense. I was like, well, they're magical. Like, obviously they're fighting men. Like, I wasn't like, oh, duh. They're like a weapon of, you know, like biological warfare.
You got another character who isn't perfectly good or perfectly bad, you know? Other than, I feel like maybe the White Walkers or the Night King, maybe he might be perfectly evil, but even him, he was a victim, you know, so.
Well, he was created for one, when you're created for one sole purpose, it's kind of hard not to be, like, totally down for that, but, you know.
Who was he before? Maybe it doesn't matter.
I mean, the sort of theory is always that it's like a, it's a Stark, like a great, great grand Stark. Who was, you know, living closest to the wall, or was like a night's watch. But like all good questions that are like really just glossed over, kind of underwhelmed, you know, by that, because, and I mean, it's a cool, like, it's a cool plot point. And I think the idea that the children like created this weapon against men is super interesting and kind of ties in with a lot that we, you know, that we've seen in the show. But man, like, who is this guy? I don't know if you could tell, like, but the children, is it the same person who's sitting with him in the tree who actually put the dagger into, like,
I think, I mean, they all kind of look pretty similar, so I want to say yes.
Right.
I don't know how they're built in the credits, but.
Right, like, how long do they live? I don't know, like, I feel like if you're gonna build up this kind of mythology, give it some,
or at least
give it
depth.
Some time, you know, yeah. like let it breathe a little bit, you know what I mean? Like, who was this guy? What happened between, you know, turning that one guy into a White Walker and everything else? Like, that could have been like a great moment to build up the history.
Yeah, definitely. And also, like, I thought a great point is it. Apparently, it used to be summer there as well.
In the north.
Oh yeah. In the scene, it's clearly summer. Yeah. There's no snow or anything, so clearly that change must have happened after the white started.
So is this the shift that makes it so that there's centuries of winter and centuries of summer, or like decades of summer?
Basically, yeah, that's the idea, that this is sort of the genesis of the first winter that ever came.
And moving on, Bran steals his dad's car. I was just like, are you kidding me?
He's the biggest knucklehead of all time. Like, this is what got him in trouble originally. This is why he doesn't have his legs anymore. Just poking his head shit and shit he doesn't belong, you know? Like,
oh, Bran, you knucklehead.
I don't know. Bran is just pissing me off right now. I can't with Bran.
Like, I don't understand why you see an undead army. You're like, cool. Let me just walk through them. Cool.
I'm going to hang out.
Like, what? Like, I don't think you understand what's at fucking stake right now, but, like, why?
Yeah. He already knows that, like, it can affect, or he at least has some kind of effect, or has some kind of presence in the visions that he's in. So, they're not just visions, right? He knows that.
Well,
it's not totally, right? I mean, because the only time we've seen him maybe affect the past is when he thinks his father hurt him. And the guy's like, no, he thinks it's the wind, like, you don't, you know? So, again, though, right? Like, that's kind of why I'm not into this, the execution of all this, because, like, I just feel like it was rushed. I feel like everything was really rushed, or that they spent a lot of time getting here, and now they're just, like, trying to zip through it, you know?
And not to mention, they didn't finish whatever happened with Lyanna.
Yeah, that's what I didn't understand. It's like, if Bran is making the choice to, like, go back or visit a time in the past / present, why would he choose that? Like, if anything, wouldn't he want to know what happened in the Tower of Joy? Or, like, wouldn't he want to see his family?
I think, okay, so how I gathered it, how I saw it was, he touched a root, and that root, they're all, those trees are connected, right? So that root led to the tree that he went to. He picked the wrong root, apparently. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I'm just mad.
I mean, does it work like that? I don't think it's like a plug and play. I thought it was just kind of like, you know, you touch it, you have access to everything.
It did seem, though, that the Three-Eyed Raven sort of guides him, sort of a free-for-all. You know, he can, like, sort of fall into stuff that's not, maybe he shouldn't be checking out, right?
Look at that. Now that he's been touched and the Night's King was able to enter a protected place, if Bran goes south of the wall or makes it that far, is he going to remove the spell that's stopping them from crossing the wall as well?
Well, Now we're touching on the introduction of time travel.
Well, here, that right? And the effect of magic at this point as well.
Yeah, no, but I mean the idea that all of this has already happened, basically.
Well, before we scoot that because, far, let's scoot into what happens when the Night's King gets to the tree.
And brings the hordes.
Basically, once the Night King grabs Bran, he then breaks a spell that protects, you know, basically bars him from entering the...
And he marks him. So I think that goes wherever Bran is now.
Yeah, we don't know if it's like a Find Your iPhone app he just installed.
He's been low-jacked. You
know? Basically. Yeah. Night King enters, kills all the Children of the Forest, which is ironic because Children of the Forest created them. And I feel like that should have been a bigger moment because... they created these creatures? I don't know. It just seemed like kind of rushed through again. So we get into basically... oh, God. I can't remember her name right now. She's in a tree with Bran.
Mira.
She's, you know, frantically trying to save Bran, trying to get him to wake up so that he can war against Hodor.
Also, like, how quickly did the Night's King get there with his whole
arm? He was around the corner, so apparently. Fast. Like, that was ridiculous.
And he got there with all of his hordes, too.
Honestly, given the amount of horde that they had, I don't think any of them should have realistically survived. No. But that's another issue. So, once they enter the tree, Bran manages to warg into Hodor. They make it down a hallway. We get our classic, I'll sacrifice myself for the team with this one, Children of the Forest, the last one, we can assume.
She gets stabbed a lot.
Does that grenade move?
Well, first of all, when they're running through that hallway, that's some of, like, the worst special effects that I think we've seen in the show so far. Like, they look like they're on a treadmill in front of like, a green screen. The only thing that really redeemed it for me was that Hodor scene, which I thought was really beautiful and really sad. You know, it's like, there's so much new information that just gets blasted, mm-hmm. you know, in this episode, that it's really hard, I think, to, as a viewer, like, decide what's important and what isn't, you know? And, like, something like time travel is always difficult in storytelling, right? Because, obviously, it's like, it creates this, like, this logical loop, you know, that you're like thinking about, right? So like, the trick with time travel is don't think about it too much, you know.
Basically,
and just sort of like, it's like the Austin Powers, you know, like, well, if I'm, you know, back in time, no, like, just forget it and just like go with it, right? I was gonna say, like, it's beautiful the way it's done, but you think about it for 1 minute and it's like, oh wait, so this had to have happened, right? This has had to have happened because it's already happened. So it makes me sort of wonder, well, so they're on the right track then, basically. You know, like, the sacrifices were meant to happen. Jojen knew he was going to die leading them there. Hodor sort of knew that he was going to end up there in that moment. And I find it to be kind of uplifting. Because it's like, oh, okay, all right, cool. Like, we know, basically, that everything is going as it should.
What I'm afraid of is I really don't want time travel to become kind of a plot crutch. Or, like, a way to say, I just don't want the books to end with, like, someone or Bran going back in time and changing one thing and then changing the course of everything else. Like, that would really, really disappoint me.
So, I don't think it's going to do that, but, basically, like, he's already done that.
Well, then we're going back into the whole, like, basically time is a flat circle loop, which I don't mind, actually. I mean, given what happened to Hodor or Willis... at the moment, was Bran warging into him that caused him to have that seizure? Or, like, was it... that's what I'm trying to understand, like...
Unclear, right? Because it looks like Hodor, or, like Willis, before he becomes Hodor, sees him. And that's what kind of, like, makes him lose it.
It's hard to say with this kind of thing, because it's hard to find a reason in the actual seizure. Like, a health reason. But, I mean... Bran wargs into him in the past and is controlling him in the future. So it makes sense that past him, who's not being, you know, controlled, who's just warged out, he's just stuck in this little warg glitch loop, you know, and what control does he have, you know? I mean, it's actually kind of incredible to me that he developed a personality as Hodor after all this time, you know, like, what...
Yeah, well, we actually, and they touch on this in the, they talk about this a lot in the books, But basically, when you warg into another person or animal, their mind is battling with you for control. Animals are easier, the stupider the animal, obviously, the easier it is. But warging into humans is supposed to be one of the biggest no-nos you can do. And it's also incredibly difficult. In fact, one skin changer does it in Dance with Dragons, and he actually has to leave the woman's body, whom he takes over, because she just freaks out and tries to kill herself immediately. Like, she starts, you know, ripping at her throat, trying to tear out her eyes. So it's a very, you know, aggressive and violent experience. So we kind of lose a lot of that. Like, if they had somehow shown, like, that's what happens, we would maybe understand what would have been happening to Willis at that time. And to your point, then would have been amazing that he's, like you mentioned, has continued to develop past that point.
It's going to be interesting to see sort of, you know, how they deal with this sort of the rest of the show, or like the parts of it that haven't ever, you know, been dealing with the sort of magical realism. Tyrion, when he's talking to the Red Priestess, she says something, or like when she's talking to Varys, she mentions like everything is as it should be, everyone is playing the correct role they should be. And you know, when you define that as sort of how a show is, like the rules of the show, to me, I think it kills a little bit of the like the politics of the show, you know what I mean, the sort of like the suspense of seeing different people like backstab each other, you know, because you can rest back and be like, well, everything is as it should be, and you know, and this guy was meant to die, you know, instead of feeling the tragedy of like a character like Robb Stark.
Yeah, where there actually could have been multiple outcomes and not just like, oh, what was going to happen was going to happen, shrug it off, you know, like whatever. Yeah, totally.
So you're saying that determinism in this kind of kills any anticipation, like the end game is going to be what it is no matter what?
Basically, yeah, basically. So I mean, in the sense like we're just like flipping the pages now to just sort of figure out what happens instead of being sort of like constantly surprised and caring about it and sort of feeling any sort of realism to it, or like real tragedy to it, you know, all the sort of really intense deaths that we've seen of characters that we've loved all become kind of diminished. I mean, and you know, diminished in one sense, and then in the other sense, like become these sort of like beautiful like allegories, right? And that's what you get with the Hodor scene. What is going to be the moment when the, let's say, the world of the Lannisters, the one, you know, that space that they occupy is going to have to meet this space,
like the magical space that Bran is currently in?
Yeah. Yeah, when everything really is going to come to a nexus, and it looks like it's going to happen somewhere in the north. I mean, so the only place that Bran and Mira can go is maybe like back south, right? And to warn people, maybe they go home. Maybe she goes to see her father, Holland Reed, who we've seen already in the other you know, flashback. Maybe he plays a role now.
Wait, but the only thing that I really don't understand is like, how do we expect her to get Bran all the way back?
Yeah, I mean, the seconds that, like, Hodor was able to buy them, that Bran was able to buy them through Hodor, like, it doesn't seem like it's enough to escape something that got there in 20 minutes, basically. You know, like, you made it, they found them in 20 minutes, like,
oh, maybe, God, maybe Benjen Stark is hanging out somewhere up there.
Maybe, maybe
oh, you know, they could actually meet Cold Hands.
Maybe Namira, I mean, you know, the Hound is kicking about.
I mean, I'm just saying I mean, the Hodor scene was beautiful. I just, within that, as he was holding it and being stabbed, I was like, they are not far enough. I can still see them. Like, they're not gonna.
Yeah. I trust that there's gonna be more friends.
I gotta say, I feel kind of sold short on Bran's, his ascension to basically, I don't know, godhood. You know, he was supposed to learn everything, right? That was the big claim made by the old...
I mean, when he asked him about it, like, you know, am I ready? And the Bloodraven's like, no. Like, you're definitely not ready. Like, we're really fucked right now. I don't know if you understand this.
I mean, maybe, you know, I guess when he gets back down and he's going to connect with, I'm guessing it's going to be with Jon.
Jon's already headed to Winterfell. Well, he's headed to
he's
the...
Well, he's like, but he's like gathering the families, right? Well, he's like gathering backup, and maybe like the Reeds are some of that backup, you know? Maybe there's a place that they're going to meet there. I mean, I feel like they're... I don't know.
Say if, for some reason, somehow, they make it to the wall, Eddie would have to let them in, be like, hey, what's up? He'd be like, hey, I'm Johnson's brother. Have you seen him? And Eddie's going to be like, oh, he's gone crazy. And then White Walkers show up and then...
slay everybody at the wall.
I think that this season we'll see, like, the White Walkers will finally make it to the wall. But I...
Oh, you do?
Yeah, yeah. I think they're definitely going to make it, and that's kind of going to be the season ending. But I don't think... I don't predict that John and Bran are going to meet up this season. Because I think what we're going to do is we're going to have John deal with Winterfell. And that whole thing's going to play out. Then we're going to get, like, the setting for, like, the actual big war with the White Walkers.
Well, so maybe it's like, you know, like, usually every season has had, like, the penultimate episode has something really big happen. So, like, probably episode 9 we're looking at, like, a northern standoff.
A Winterfell action set piece with a big battle.
Yeah, and then you can have, like, a nice episode 10 end with, like, a little reunion and a you know, kickoff to the next season where we turn our attention towards... Right. Nice.
Wait, you're telling me I have to wait four more goddamn episodes to finally see this Winterfell battle?
Episode 9. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I think so. I think he's gonna gather the troops. We're gonna see some more Riverland stuff. We have to get back to
the High Sparrow
for like an episode.
The battle between the King's Guard and the High Sparrow is gonna be a... Well, it's the Tyrell's army, right?
I think it's gonna be next episode.
Yeah, that looks like it's coming up.
It better fucking be. I'm tired talking about this.
You know,
I mean, maybe we'll finally get a Dorne episode.
I want my Head Sparrow to, you know, redeem.
I want him
to wash the sins of everyone at
I want him to wash away their sins with his own blood. Okay, that's where I'm at right now. Maybe we'll actually go back to Dorne and see what's going on with that, because like right now nothing's happening. Sugar. Yeah, but I mean, like, that was to Greg's point, a huge thing that happened, and we just never talked about it again.
Yeah,
we had plenty of time to do so. So I'll stop being salty about it. All right. Do you guys have any last minute predictions or anything you want to share? Talk.
You know, I heard an interesting theory about about what's going on in the Red Keep, and it has to do with Joffrey, actually, and the Broken Lords.
Okay.
You know, maybe he gave up his family in their involvement in Joffrey's death, and maybe the High Sparrow mentioned that to Tommen in confidence. So, I mean, I think there could be something to that. And
I think
that's an interesting...
No, because it's interesting, but I don't think that the Queen of Thorns... She didn't really even tell Margaery she did. She kind of, like, vaguely confirmed. But she wouldn't risk anyone actually knowing that. Like, that's some serious shit to even know that's about.
True. Wait, you're talking about Lady Olenna?
They're insinuating that she would have told Loras, and therefore Loras would have snitched later, but I don't think she would have even told him that.
Nah, Loras isn't like... I mean, he's the pretty boy, you know? You don't tell him, like, the real... Yeah. You don't tell him, like, the real family shit, you know?
Yeah, he can't be trusted with that kind of information.
I mean, we saw that Margaery expected more out of him. I mean, she was disappointed, but perhaps you're right. Maybe Loras is...
No, I mean...
Just wasn't trustworthy.
Yeah, he's like a mimbo, you know? He just, like... Hangs around on his horse. And
knocks guys down.
He confirmed that, like, Tommen was a bastard, and that was the thing they told said in confidence. But at this point, that's, like, super old news, and, like, Cersei already did the walk, so at this point they're having a trial, so that'd be really unuseful information.
Right. That's the bigger point. Everybody's going to be fucked when the Night's King gets there, you know? And that's how it is every time winter comes around.
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
And on the other end, you got, like, Daenerys coming with an awesome army, and she's got dragon, and she's clearly magical, too. I mean, it's like, you know, magic has to fight magic at this point. Like, you're not going to, like, outwit someone, in the King's Council.
She has three dragon glass factories that are able to produce weapons for everybody.
Yeah, right. Let's see how it
goes. Well, I mean, is anyone also pointing out the fact that they should be going to Dragonstone right now to get more?
True. I didn't even think of that. That's probably like a giant dragon.
I think the whole thing is Dragonglass. They touched on that once and then they never mentioned that again. All right, guys. Well, I guess that is all. Quick note. I predict that Arya is going to fail at killing Lady Crane.
Oh, shit. Now she is going to fail.
The three-eyed raven has spoken.
She's going to fail in a way that won't be her fault, though.
I mean, if she just bounced at this point, like, she's picked up a lot of skills, I don't right? Think like, she could
just, like, dip out. She didn't touch on this, but
how dope was that fight scene, like, where she was fighting that girl? Like, that girl has moves. I did not realize that she was that good.
Yeah.
It reminded me of The Matrix.
I thought it was really funny the way he's been holding back this whole time. Okay, well, thanks, guys. I'll see you next week. All right.
Thanks, Armani.
All right, bye.
For sure.
Thank you.